J. Coles is my guest for this episode of Our Curious World. If you're listening to this on audio, whenever and wherever you are listening, be sure also to check out the YouTube edition too, available at youtube.com/Christian Lander for an exclusive overdrive of Our Curious World beyond the credits of this episode. No, dude, I mean, the heck, we were running with a good conversation here now, so I'm just going to let it keep recording. So
okay.
I kind of messaged you completely, utterly, randomly, because you know how Facebook always comes up with those suggested friends? And I was like, this guy, it says we got 7 mutual friends, and I'm going,
yes.
And I saw your picture at that time was the Glee Club, and I was aware that at the end of the week, my media company, who I work with, that's much more, we're actually going to go and review that show. And I was like, okay, that's what this guy's about. And then I saw that we had 7 mutual friends that, for me, they're all in very different circles. And I was like, how random is that? I'm going to give this guy a message, which is what I sent to you. I was like,
you did?
Sound a bit random. But actually, you know, the friends we've got, all have in common, are all from different circles for me. How are they for you? And I saw we had this comedy event coming up, and I was like, dude, I think it'd be really good to talk about how you got into comedy and stand-up and stuff, and I think it'd be a really good conversation to have. So here we are, now about a week and a half on.
Yes. Nearly 2 weeks after I did the comedy.
I know, crazy, right?
Yeah, that was real crazy, to be quite honest. It was an experience, let's say that.
So let's talk about that comedy thing. So let's just, how did you end up doing this? It was like a course, right?
Well, I mean, my journey into doing it, I've always tried to be the funny one among my friends and failed miserably a lot. So, you know, but I've had a lot of friends over the years say to me, you should do stand-up. And
same, yeah.
And I've always said to them, like, no, I shouldn't. You know, it's very different making your friends laugh than standing in front of a room full of people and going, I'm funny, and just having them actually respond to that. So it's like, I really, really shouldn't. And then this ultra comedy advert just popped up on Facebook, as they randomly do, because, you know, the Russians are mining our brains to see what we're even thinking about and then giving us ads towards it. And at that point, it was like, it's for charity. There's 8 weeks. If I'm ever going to give it a go, I might as well give it a go. And that's literally what I did. So January 1st of this year, I signed up, and like 6 months later, I was on stage doing stand-up comedy.
So this was at the Glee Club, wasn't it?
This was at the Glee Club, yes.
So were the Glee Club actually like the sponsors of the event?
As far as I'm aware, no, because all of our ticket sales had to go into paying for the Glee Club. So I think Ultra Comedy, who's the company who runs it, and they're doing it for cancer research,
gotcha,
had to basically hire the Glee Club. I couldn't tell you for definite, but that's the impression I got.
Okay, I got you.
So all ticket sales had to go towards them.
Oh, so technically you guys were technically hiring the venue from the...
Yeah.
I got you.
To put on a charity event, which, you know, great, because it's going to be a very long time before I'm going to be able to play the Glee Club again.
So how many people were... Because you guys did a course, right? Because I saw that you mentioned that on your wall. So how did that come about?
Well, part of the event that, say, the Ultra Comedy people, yeah, are doing, they do the Ultra group do loads of things, like there's boxing and ballroom dancing, and I did debate the boxing one and then realized, no, I don't want to get hit in the face.
No punches.
So
it's too pretty.
Exactly. I mean, I've seen this face, it doesn't do well with bruising, but it's always 8 weeks free training. So okay. That's what they advertised, 8 weeks free training. So it was about 9 weeks before we met up at the Glee Club to do the event. There was a registration event at Via Fossa in town, just around the corner from the Glee Club.
Yeah, I know that, yeah.
And that's where everybody who was interested registered. And then a few days after that was the first lesson. And that was also at Via Fossa, and that's where we met Chris Purchase, who's the professional comedian who was training us.
So how many people, like, signed up? Was there a big group? Because I saw the picture you had, there was about, 15 people there. Was there people who signed up and then perhaps dropped away because they got a bit... feet got a bit cold?
I couldn't tell you about Cold Feet. There was definitely people who dropped out. Like the original Facebook group that they added, like everybody had to join the Facebook group so that we got all the information and stuff so that we'd all turn up to the right places. And originally, with admins of the group, there was 80-odd people in it.
Oh, so that's a lot of people.
And, yeah, performing at the Glee Club was 21 of us. So there was quite a few people who obviously showed interest and for whatever reasons decided it wasn't for them or couldn't commit to that particular time. So our first registration, I think there was about 30 people turned up.
So how many of those, so did everyone get a chance and opportunity then to perform in terms from that original sign up group? Did everyone get, did you make friends with these people and did you manage to get a rapport with them?
I would say from the original registration group, we was given basically what was expected of us, which is to, it was to sell 10 tickets for the event, raise at least £50 for cancer research, and to turn up to half of the lessons at least.
Okay.
So over the course of the lessons, obviously some people turned up early on and then never really came back. But quite early on, it was obvious which people would be sticking out the entire course.
Yeah, because I guess there is always those, those ones who have the enthusiasm, those are thinking, shit, this is fucking not for me. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there was a couple of dropouts. Like, from registration to the first lesson, there was a lot of people who just never came back. The first lesson was quite small compared to what the second lesson was. There was a few new people turned up in the second week going, yeah, I want to give this a go, and only a couple of them then continued on with the course after that. But the very basic core of us was about 21.
Okay.
And
so you had a professional comedian who was a coach for that experience, right?
Yes, Chris Purchase, his name is, a very talented man, very funny.
So what did you have like a set in mind? Was did you have some kind of thoughts going into what you had to talk about, or did he kind of give you some coaching around that?
Well, obviously he gave us ideas from. Or, well, he didn't give us ideas. He gave us feedback on what we already had. Or I can't really speak for everybody else who was involved. But like I said, I signed up for it on the 1st of January. And being a rather obsessive person, from the 1st of January till...
Started writing, right?
Till, yeah, I had ideas. I had so many ideas buzzing around my head that I could have probably done an hour-long set at the Glee and bored everybody. But it was a lot to then take all the ideas I'd had and try to make them succinct, because we had 5 minutes. I think most of us ran over, but we was told we had 5 minutes, and that's not that long a time if it's going well, although if you forget stuff, it's a very long time.
Yeah, man, I've been in performances myself, like where you're saying your shit, it's spilling off, and then you have not... brain fart, you know, it just stops, and then it stops everything, and then you start reading the reactions of the crowd, and then you think, shit, what's going to go wrong, what am I going to say? And I think that's, there's a learning curve for every kind of comedian or any kind of performer. There has to be, what's my backup, what's my routine where I roll back into the circle again. Did you find that yourself?
I did have somebody in the crowd who basically a friend of mine who had said, like, if you stand there and can't remember anything, I will just shout out some random story that I tell everybody and you can just spiel that off because you've said it so many times. Oh, me being me, I'm a little bit arrogant when it comes to that. It's like, I'm not gonna forget anything, I'm not gonna need any of that. I got on stage, first thing I did was basically tell people to be quiet. Yeah, I don't know where that one came from. I walked on the stage trying to get the crowd cheering, you know, telling them to cheer me more, pick up the microphone, tell them to basically stop that, it's my turn to talk. You know, I do that with a hand gesture, and then I went and completely mucked up my first joke.
Man, so actually you kind of bottled it a bit.
I didn't bottle it. The first line that I had, I think I covered it well, and everybody I spoke to said, well, we can't tell, but I got the lines mixed up, and it was like, okay, move on.
I like about the history of comedy. Mm. I like how people come up with jokes and concepts, and like how a joke really, the most amazing thing about a joke is has to be real, it has to be tangible, but there has to be some part of it that is completely and utterly out of context, that is so over the top that that's what the crux is of the laugh, is that everyone knows it's so absurd. Mm-hmm. And they get it, and they enjoy that. But did you? What kind of set did you run? Did you more of anecdotal stuff? Was it story?
I work a lot more observational, I think. Okay. The set I did, it starts off with talking about my daughter and when she was first born, but it wasn't personal stuff of like what happened in the hospital or stuff. It just my general thoughts of around that time, about the stuff that I don't know. Have you got children?
I do. My son is just there. My daughter's somewhere.
Yeah.
But my kids are now like 20 and 19. Scary stuff.
So it's when I first like found out that I was going to be a dad, and it was just the overwhelming amount of stuff that you have to buy and you have to get your head around, and figuring out that most of it you don't bloody need.
No, you're an idiot.
I used to say to my partner at the time when it was like, I'm completely in the wrong business selling shit to pregnant people. That's what we should be doing. Come up with an idea and you'll be a millionaire.
Dude, there's a market in that for shit. Because women will buy anything. You just have to put it there on a plate and serve it to them in a way that they know that they feel they have to take this shit on. I'm a manager for Asda, right? So I see the come out crazy shit that's available on the shelf in the baby section. Mm. I like, you just put a giraffe on it and mothers will buy it. And you create a bit of social media buzz about anything and mothers will latch onto it. I mean, there's like Mumsnet and stuff and people giving each other advice on health advice and stuff. And you go, fucking hell, you know, I should have been in this. I should have been a female guide. I should be their trainer.
You know, one of the earliest lines that didn't actually make it into my set was basically, if you find an idea that you can market to pregnant people, then congratulations, son, you're going to be a millionaire. But that didn't make it into the set. I cut that line. I thought it was a little bit weak compared to some of the others. And like I say, we only had 5 minutes. And that was one of the experiences of writing this, was boiling down the bigger joke to just what was needed.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's like how some people craft stuff. I'm a writer. I've got a number of books, a number of essays and stuff out there. But so when I came to writing comedy into one of my stories, on what I really found really hard was, you know, trying to imagine myself as the character telling the story, let alone telling a joke. Now, I've never done stand-up. I've performed on stage. I've been compere and stuff for events, but I've never told a joke on stage. And the idea of writing something and actually then having to whittle it down to find out what is actually funny, or is it because I find it funny, or am I playing to an audience who should find it funny? I found that a bit foggy. I mean, how did you find that?
My basic rule was, I knew there was going to be about 300 people stood in front of me, and I know what I find funny, and I know what my friends find funny. And the way I saw it was, I am literally there to make one particular friend laugh. If I can do that, I've done what I'm meant to do. And that was my goal, because I felt that if I tried to do something for everybody, I was going to fail miserably. And I just had to do what I found and what I know my friends do, and just hope that we're not the two only people in the world who find this funny. Luckily, it looks like I hit that, judging by the responses I've got.
Nice. But so how was your response then from the general crowd? Well, who was the kind of, who made up the audience really? Was it just general kind of Joe public, or was it actually members of families who were there to support comedians on stage? How was the dynamic of the crowd that was there that night?
The majority of it was all friends and families of everybody supporting. As say, we was given the task of selling like 10 tickets each, 21 of us, the Glee seats, about 300 people, 21 times 10, that's 210 tickets. So, and obviously people did sell more. I myself sold about 12 tickets, I think, to my friends and family, and would have sold more, but they left it too late and then couldn't get tickets. So, you know, it's like, well, I've been telling you about this since January, so it's not like you haven't had time. But
there's always those who make an excuse. Well, I was waiting closer to the time. I didn't know.
Yeah, we're just waiting for payday. And, oh, I didn't know what I'd be working that day. So,
well, this is where you plan ahead and you go, work, this 3 months' time I'm going to an event.
Yep.
Have it off.
Yeah, I booked 2 weeks off work just to get my head in the right space to do it. So,
let's have a look at that. Is it a Superman mug? Let's have a look.
It's a Superman mug, yes. Can you see that?
I can, yeah. It's really cool, man.
Yep. It's one of several. I also have a Darth Vader and a Leonardo. I am one of those people, I have so many coffee mugs around the house that people think I collect them, and I don't. It's just, I just have so many, and people keep buying me more that now I have a collection.
Or is it because you're drinking coffee and just happen to put it down and it just stays there, is that it?
No, as I say, I've just got too many mugs. It's ridiculous. Pardon?
I don't think I have enough.
No? Well, I generally drink from the same three. And I've got about 20 odd different mugs. Plus, we've got the nice ones for when the parents come to visit because they don't want to be drinking out of a turtle's head.
I was going to say, what's your three favourites then? What you got? So, your Superman mug, is that your favourite?
No, my favourite one is my Union Jack mug. Not because I'm particularly royalist or anything like that. It's just huge. Wow. So, then it's probably that one and my Darth Vader one, which is ridiculously hard to drink out of.
So, what is it, a detachable head? Or do you drink?
It's basically Darth Vader's helmet and the top of the head cut off, obviously, for the hole. But wherever I go, I've got mugs sitting somewhere. Just about all of my mates' houses, the partner's parents, my parents, everybody has a mug that is my mug.
Okay.
So when I go round, that's what I drink from.
You have an allocated... It's a drink. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at your Facebook wall earlier, and I was going to go, right, what can I tag? How was the White Rice Krispies?
How was the White Rice Krispies?
How are they, what are they like, man? What are they like? I keep meaning to try them.
They're okay. I was going to do like a review video of them, but then breakfast came along and I was just too hungry to set up any video cameras and do any of that. So, the first mouthful tastes like white chocolate, then the milk drains them out and they become Rice Krispies. So,
Fair enough. Because I keep seeing them and I keep going, I'm going to have to buy some. I haven't had like Cocoa Pops in maybe like 10 years, but the White Rice Krispies, I was like, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I fell for the marketing on that one. It was like, I saw them, and originally I resisted, as you do. It's like, no, I'm nearly 40 years old. I can live without white chocolate Rice Krispies or Cocoa Pops. The next time I was in the shop, I bought them.
Have you seen them other cereals, right? They're like Disney cereals that seem to change when the movie comes out.
Oh, God, yeah.
You have like Moana and Frozen. I think they're like Cars at the moment. And I guess they're
going to... it's Toy Story 4 at the moment.
No, you're right. It's Toy Story 4. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
But
yes.
So I bought them when they were like Frozen. I don't know why. And they were just, it was just this utter mush. Just as soon as the milk went out, that was it. It's just like...
I'm pretty sure they're just the Rice Krispie multigrain cereal or whatever it is. So that's all they are, but they keep remarketing them every time there's a new Disney film come out.
Disney doesn't have a shortlist, do they? They got film after film coming out now.
Yeah, well.
I saw like Ariel the Little Mermaid got announced recently as well. What?
Oh, that caused some nice controversy over the internet, didn't it?
Yes. Terry Crews' daughter taking on the role of Ariel.
Yeah.
I thought about
Mermaid that. Science. Did you see that one when people are actually trying to give reasons why a mermaid could not be black? And it's like, it's a freaking mermaid. They don't exist.
No.
The myth probably comes from manatees. Have you seen what they look like? Are we going to cast one of them? So
I was looking at the whole... I've read Hans Christian Andersen's book like, when I was like a kid. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's quite disturbingly dark when I saw the Disney version when I was about the age not long after I'd read the book. And I was going, this is nothing like the book. And I understand why people get pissed off now. When they go, it's nothing like the book. No, it really really isn't. When,
she doesn't die at the end.
No, she doesn't commit suicide, no.
No. But then again, if you look through all of the Disney-fied fairy tales, I think Sleeping Beauty doesn't wake up when the prince kisses her in the original story. She wakes up in childbirth or something.
That's right, yeah, because after he consummates while she's asleep.
Yes,
rape scene was completely removed from the Disney version.
I've got no idea why they would do that.
No.
So... But these were the fairy tales. This is what gets to me sometimes when they remake the old Disney classics. And people are going, oh, you can't remake the classic. You can't rewrite that. That's not how it happened. That's not how it happened. And then it's like, yeah, but the way you like it is not how it happened. Disney have already done this at least once.
Yeah, at least.
So
I did think to myself, okay, why did they not cast the redhead, you know, nubile girl as Ariel? It's not, there probably isn't that many redheads actually in the Hollywood LA circle right now. What is there? The chick from the Marvel movies and Sophia from Game of Thrones.
Who's already Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, so I don't think there's a choice of that many redheaded actresses they can choose from that age range that are of a higher level.
I don't know. Emma Stone could probably play it. She's probably a little bit too old, but...
Yeah. And that's a fair point, actually. She would have chosen Little Mermaid 20 years on, and now she's coming back to find Prince.
Slightly bigger mermaid.
Yeah.
Bit pissed off, you know.
Because they did that with that... what's it called? Maleficent, isn't it? That's like a sequel prequel, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one where with Angelina Jolie as the witch from... Sleeping Beauty, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And they still skip over the rape scene. So, yeah.
Yeah, they do. I haven't actually seen Maleficent, actually. It's quite good.
It is pretty good. It's better than, say, the remake of Beauty and the Beast. I don't know whether you saw that one.
You know, I really haven't. I haven't.
Oh, dear. Beauty and the Beast has always been one. I loved it when I was a kid, and I was just about the right age when it came out to absolutely love it. But as I've grown older, it's like... They've completely missed the real bad guy of this movie.
Yeah.
The witch who curses the 10-year-old boy at the beginning of the film and everybody who lives within the castle, that's the real bad guy, not the egotistical bloke who just wants the best-looking woman in town. Who, quite honestly, if you found out there was a monster living at the edge of town, you'd probably want him dead.
Particularly when it's your competition.
Yeah, exactly. But... What makes it worse is the remake of Beauty and the Beast, like, the witch is still around the whole time. And you find out that it's not just the people in the castle who have been cursed, it's everybody in the surrounding village have been cursed because these were the people that they were married to, friends, family, and they've all completely forgotten about them. So when everything changes at the end, they just all get these memories back. And not one of them goes burning a witch. Which, considering the time period, would have been a lot more likely.
Yeah, of course. What is it set, like, mid-1700s, 1750 or something?
I couldn't tell you exactly.
It's a fairy tale. Yeah, so, I've never actually seen Terry Crews' daughter actually act in anything.
I haven't. I've seen Terry Crews, obviously, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he was a great president.
He was?
Yep.
And of course, he was in Chris Rock's dad in...
In Everybody Hates Chris, yep.
Which I loved, that was good. So I'd be interested to see if his daughter got the same skills, I don't know. We should find out. Because, like, I mean, Will Smith's kids didn't fare too well, did they?
I don't know. I'm one of those weird people who actually likes the remake of The Karate Kid.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't rate it anywhere near as highly as the original. Obviously, the original is a classic for a reason. But the remake was okay. You know, it was nice. You could just sit, watch it, forget about it. So, I didn't find it insulting, although...
There was that other Karate Kid, wasn't there? It was like 4, wasn't it? Where it was like a girl?
Do you not remember who the girl was?
No.
Hilary Swank.
Really?
Really. Oscar winner Hilary Swank was the girl Karate Kid in The Next Karate Kid, which was made around about 92, I think.
Yeah, it's not like that. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I do like my rubbish cinema.
Hey, man, so rubbish cinema. I think what have I seen at the cinema recently? Godzilla. Quite enjoyed that, actually. At its moments. What else have I seen? I'm supposed to be going to see Spider-Man this week. No,
I haven't seen that yet, no.
I'm not even interested. And I'm not fussed. I don't feel that emotional investment anymore. I'm just like, really?
Again? I know this sounds weird coming from a man who is wearing a Superman top and drinking from a Superman mug, but I'm completely superheroed out.
Dude, same here. I am absolutely just superheroed out totally. I don't want to see any more for the time being, because every TV show right now is Superman or superpowers orientated. You know, everyone's got superpowers. I'm just like, come on, stop for a bit. Stop.
Yeah, no.
Hollywood likes to milk as much as they can.
Of course they do. Milk the cash cow. But as I say, me and a few friends do a old film review podcast. 2 years ago, we used to do another one that was based entirely around geeky stuff, where we used to do more recent film reviews and old film reviews and all of the TV stuff. And we ended up stopping because we got to that point of just, we don't care anymore. And every week we was just sitting down and we was watching episodes of The Flash or Arrow and going back onto the podcast and just pointing out everything that was possibly wrong with it.
Yeah.
And it just stops being enjoyable when you watch it from that kind of angle. And we realized we're not enjoying this anymore.
No,
so
I think I dipped back into the Arrowverse when Constantine turned up with Matt Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, loving this. And then I was like, I think it was in Legends of Tomorrow for about two, three episodes. And then was he in an episode of Arrow as well?
He was definitely in an episode of Arrow. I dipped out of Legends of Tomorrow before he came into it. And to be quite honest, I didn't watch the entirety of Constantine either.
No.
I just found it didn't grab my interest enough. Okay. I thought he was playing it brilliantly, but the stories just weren't holding me. So
the one thing I thought was really interesting is that I read those graphic novels growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that they were actually quite true to their Origins books. They were quite good. The only thing that was different, of course, was the girl. She was, instead of being an 80s like rock goth chick,
mm-hmm.
she was, of course, more modern. Apart from that, the stories actually were pretty close to their original counterpart.
Yeah, but if you've read the graphic novels, you know, you know what's to come, and it's just, I've already got my head what this should look like.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just can't get over what your head's already telling you, you know, and what they can do on a TV budget just isn't the same as what your head can conjure up. So
in my mind, I'm now thinking about the other shows that are superheroes that are coming out now. We've got, like, I guess Stranger Things has hooked the attention of many with having Elle as the only superpowered character. I think mm-hmm. quite good. Have you been watching Stranger Things?
I've steered clear of Stranger Things, I'll be honest. It came out with too much hype around it, and unfortunately everyone was telling me I should be watching it, and it's like, this will now no way can it live up to what everyone's telling me. So I kind of skirted around it.
Hype's an interesting thing, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, I guess the way the hype works is that everyone talks about it, you know? I guess the Game of Thrones effect, you know, where we have, like, where everyone is so eager to tell you the story because they've read so far in the book, and they're like, this is going to be great, it's going to be on the screen, it's going to be amazing, and then, well, actually, kind of give... It was quite good.
So, no, Game of Thrones I dipped out of in the second season. So,
well, I dipped out of three, actually. I was watching three, and then I was like, you know, I'm 2 pounds out. I came back mm-hmm. as the build-up for six was happening, kind of refreshed myself, and went, you know what, actually, what they're doing is really good. I mean, as a filmmaker myself, I'm like, what they're putting into their production values is unheard of for a TV, let alone the budget for it.
Yeah.
But they've done all right for themselves, apart from the last series. It's a bit too good.
Well, I dipped out season two, and then by the time anybody closer to me had decided that they were going to start watching it, I just thought I might as well now wait until it's all come out and then just do one massive binge.
Yeah.
But obviously I've not been able to avoid spoilers, so I know exactly who wins the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly.
So, spoilers. You know, I've never quite understood the spoiler culture of people. Oh, spoilers, I can't enjoy it now. Of course you can. If it's a good story, you're going to enjoy it. This is why we go back to films. This is why we go back to books. I mean, I'm sure you've got those books that you have literally read cover to cover a million times. The spine's all, you know, just because you know the ending.
Like that,
yeah, just because you know the ending, it doesn't spoil the journey to get there.
The girlfriend right now is rereading about the third time Jurassic Park.
And
she loves that kind of classic Michael Crichton kind of science fiction meets fact enough that there's a tangible feel that it could actually be real. I don't think the movie could portray quite so well, but she loves it. She must have read that book three, four times now. And like when I saw it back in a bag, and I go, you read it again? Have you not seen that library we've got in the passageway? Have you not gone to your Kindle or gone to Audible and seen all this new stuff that's coming out? And she's like, no, I want to read it again. I might have missed something. You fucking what? What did you miss?
No. Every few years, I go back to the Red Dwarf books. They're just easy reads, and they're fun. You know?
I've never actually read a Red Dwarf book.
Oh, the first couple are good. Once the two of them split and stopped writing together, the quality went down. But the first two books, Red Dwarf and Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers, are actually really funny books. And you can see a lot of the ideas from the TV show, like, fleshed out more than the show ever could.
Oh, good. I guess that's down to BBC budgets at the time, isn't it? So.
Oh, yeah, but one of the things that makes Red Dwarf the classic is the real bad budget. When it went over to Dave and actually had a fairly decent budget, it kind of lost something. Yeah. Although I do believe that the last season brought it back a little. So.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I think I got into Red Dwarf around season 5 and 6 when I was like mid-teenagers, and then I drifted away and then came back at 7 and then watched 8 and 9 and come out. I love the little Dave series they did. That kind of spurred them on to bring it back, and it was really good. You know, the last season felt like Red Dwarf way back
when. It did. It felt a lot closer to what was the Red Dwarf back around about. I think I got into it roughly then the same time as you would have. And from the sounds of it, I'm slightly younger than you. Ha ha ha.
A little bit. But I know there was like last week when I got ID'd in the Pit and Pendulum.
You got ID'd?
Twice.
Wow.
Twice at the same pub that I've been going to for 20 years.
Nice.
My son who's like 20, literally half my age, didn't get ID'd.
Ah, well.
He's sitting there laughing his ass off at me now.
Of course, but, you know, it's funny. The last time I got ID'd was the day before my 30th birthday. I can remember it quite well. So that was fun. But I remember going... I can remember going to pubs like... I kind of feel sorry for kids these days because they do have such harsh checks on ID and stuff. When I was a teenager, we just went to a pub and our ID was just being able to lie.
Yes, that's right. You lie and lie convincingly.
Mm. Yeah. If they ask you, are you old enough? You say yes. And they go, okay, then I've done my job. But
are you old enough? No. Oh, okay.
I had a friend one time who completely mucked that up. He went up to the bar and the guy said to him, are you old enough? And he went, technically. Like, what does technically mean? I'll have a Coke. <You know. laughs> I just got served, also underage, drank my drink, and he's like, I really want a drink, you know, can you go and get me one? I was like, right, fine, I'll go. Went to the bar. The guy said, I forgot to ask you, are you old enough? I was like, yeah, of course I am. I says, I've met him at college, he's a couple of years younger than me, but, you know, of course I'm old enough. And he served me. It's like...
Nice.
And this was like the late 90s, early 2000s. These days... No chance of that really happening, not in most places.
No, because that person behind the bar knows that the 80 quid fine and a jail sentence, potentially.
Exactly. I mean, it did help that I grew a full beard when I was 17. So I can remember going to another mate's 18th birthday, him getting ID'd, and me going to him, yeah, well, it happens to all of us. It happened to me on mine, and I'm still 6 months away from it. So
it's quite good.
But I also decided to throw that line in so that they then didn't ID me because I couldn't. You know, I had nothing. I literally, it was like, I have hair on my face. Serve me. I am old enough.
Now give me booze. Give me booze.
Yes.
But, so your podcast, man. So what kind of classic movies tickle you? What are you like?
I'm very much into the 80s. Obviously, it's when I grew up. So every film from then is a classic as far as I'm concerned. And then you go back and you watch them and go, no, they're not, are they? Ooh, I think the last podcast we released, we reviewed Trading Places.
Yeah, of course.
Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Still a classic film, still absolutely love it. But you sit and you watch it with like today's sensibilities and go, this is really kind of racist. There is scenes in it. There's a scene in it where Dan Aykroyd blacks up. And it's like, oh, you just cannot do that now. There is no reason for you to do that.
Well, Tropic Thunder got away with it, of course. But
well, obviously. But that was RDJ, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen the meme going around on the internet? If they, you know, if the Avengers were black, who would play Iron Man? And it's just a picture of RDJ in Tropic Thunder.
No, I haven't seen that. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. No, I hadn't seen that. I've got to go find that now. So, man, so... 80s movies, right? So are we talking like Goonies, Gremlins, Ghostbusters stuff? Yeah,
except for the Goonies. For some reason, I'm a weirdo who isn't a particular fan of the Goonies, but Ghostbusters, Gremlins, obviously Rocky, although that was 1977, I believe. Yeah. But Rocky 3 was in the 80s, and Rocky 4 is the most 80s movie of all time.
Because we've got like Rocky 8 out, haven't we? We've got like Creed 2.
Yeah, which would be the eighth in technically that franchise.
Yeah, which is just crazy. There's even like there's a VR movie available now on the PlayStation. I saw.
Which right.
I saw that listed the other day, and I was like, "Well, there's a Creed movie, but in VR."
No, I've not seen that. I've seen Creed 2. I thought it was a bit weird a couple of years ago when the first Creed came out, and they nominated Sylvester Stallone for an Best Supporting Actor Oscar. Yeah, Best Supporting Actor Oscar. And it's like, he's been playing the part for 40 years. He is no longer acting. He just is that guy.
Yeah.
So
there was a certain point where the actor and the role, you know, they coalesce to become the certain character. I think, having now watched The Avengers for as long as we have, I think that's what's happened to, like, to Iron Man and to Thor.
Mm-hmm.
They've stopped being the actor. They're not playing the role of Thor or Iron Man. They're playing themselves.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with Robert Downey Jr. on that one. He just has that charisma, and it's more him. One of the sections we do on our podcast is we each time we pick an actor and we try to name our favorite performances that they've done.
Okay.
So, and there's been a few times when an actor's been picked and we've basically come away going, they just play themselves in every movie, don't they?
Yeah. You know. Do they stop? So why are they getting paid as an actor? Is it just having their name attached is what makes it?
Yeah, basically, I think the first one we did was Hugh Jackman, and trying to find a role for Hugh Jackman that felt different than anything. You know, you have two settings for Hugh Jackman, Wolverine and kind of nice, lovable guy, maybe singing a song.
Yeah, that is pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was like, really, there is a lot of good Hugh Jackman movies out there, but how many of them are good specifically because of Hugh Jackman? So
that's a good point. I'd like to see him in something like a quite darker role, actually, something like you know, perhaps where he's a Victorian kind of killer or some shit like that.
Yeah, no, have you ever seen, I think the film's called The Losers?
No, I haven't seen it.
No, it's on Netflix, and basically he plays a survivalist father. This was a pick of two of us on the podcast, so that's a good recommendation for you.
Okay.
He and his six-year-old daughters get kidnapped. Jake Gyllenhaal is in it as well, and... Basically, you get to see a real dark side of Hugh Jackman while he's trying to find the killer of his daughter, and he goes to some real extremes on it. As I say, it's on Netflix. I would definitely recommend watching.
Isn't that a comic series as well?
You're thinking of a different Losers. You're thinking of a film with Chris, with Captain America, Chris Evans.
Yeah,
which is based on a comic, but...
Huh.
As I say, I might be wrong on the name. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, and that's what's coming in. So it's just like, whatever, that's what it's called now.
Let's go and have a look. Put the keyboard right into the mic, perhaps, isn't the best of things. Right. Oh, yeah, so. Hugh Jackman archives. Oh, yeah, I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm.
He's voted to be the sexiest man alive, apparently, as well.
That's because most people don't know about me. I only came fourth on that list. It was weird. Maybe next year.
Let's try again. If we can have, like, the best woman of the year being a man. that's all good. I think.
Hey, all you need to do now is just say it.
That's it. It's true, you know, you can't just say it and you are.
Yep.
I'm a black Labrador.
And as far as I'm concerned, live and let live. If you want to say that you're a woman, you're a woman. I've got no... As long as it doesn't impede on my life, I do not care.
That's, I do generally think that's how most people are. Most people don't give a fuck. And there's this kind of like campaign that everyone must give a fuck about it. And like, most people just don't care. They're actually just pretty fine. Well, you want to be gay? That's fine. You want to be trans? You want to switch around? Whatever, that's fine. Most people don't care.
Yeah, no, every trans person I've ever met has been absolutely lovely. So... Yeah. You know, every gay person I've met has been absolutely lovely. Most straight people I've met have been lovely. There's been a few assholes, but, you know, you're going to get that everywhere.
Not expected.
So.
It's true. I think there's a strange kind of, like, command that you must, everyone must support. Well, no, do we have to?
Yeah, you know. I will, obviously, we've got Nottingham Pride coming up at the end of the month. I will be wearing my rainbow colours and supporting that because love is great and... But
have you seen they're going to be having like a Pride Road? Is that right? A Rainbow Road. That's it. Hockley's going to get repainted the rainbow colours.
Yeah, but the problem is, whenever you say Rainbow Road, I'm thinking Mario Kart, and I'm never going to be that impressed with it. It's like, it's just not the same.
It's not transparent. I can't see any stars. I can't do the jump.
Yeah, there's no chance of me falling to my death, which is probably a good thing.
So I take it by that you're a gamer as well, right?
Not really, no. I know Mario Kart on the Wii, Guitar Hero, and all of the early Mortal Kombat games, but I'm not actually a gamer.
I did hear that in the newest Mortal Kombat game, the guy who played him in the Mortal Kombat movie is now him again, and he's playing him and also voicing him.
Oh, that's cool. That would be Robin Hsu. If you're talking about Liu Kang. Yeah.
The guy who played Shao Kahn. Shang Tsung, that's it.
I can't think of his name, but I know who I could pick him.
Yeah, because that guy who was the default Japanese bad guy.
Yeah, in every movie. And him and the other guy who
Bolo
appeared in a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies.
Yeah, Bolo.
Yeah. that guy who was just like... He was your typical muscular Japanese bad guy.
Yeah.
And that's all he got to play.
Bloodsport. That was a legendary film in the 80s.
Yes, it is a great film. That is a film that I watch when I'm cleaning up the house.
Apparently it's the game that Street Fighter 2 is based off, apparently.
Yep.
One of the Capcom developers had watched Bloodsport and then took the idea of a few of the characters to develop for Street Fighter, like Blanka and Dalsim and Aiden.
Can definitely see that. And just to go into silly trivia, Johnny Cage was meant to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. In the original game, he was meant to be played by him. He's even got the split punch from like Bloodsport. And but for whatever reason, that fell through and Mortal Kombat came. Although I think another major influence on Mortal Kombat was Big Trouble in Little China.
That is still one of the best movies ever made. So much going on in that movie.
Yeah, one of my co-hosts on my podcast, Grant, that he will tell you that is his favorite film of all time. Yeah. So, and
before there was special effects.
But you know, it's got Kurt Russell in it. What's not to love about Kurt Russell?
You know, Kurt Russell in that movie doesn't do anything, which is the best thing. He's always getting stopped by doing something. And he gets knocked out. It's amazing that he's the main guy of the show because he doesn't do that much.
Absolutely not. He literally, his role there is to just be there most of the time. And he walks around because he's Jack Burton and he thinks he's doing everything. But literally everybody else in the cast is saving his ass every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So
are you looking forward to the remake?
With The Rock?
The Rock.
I'm still trying to bury that idea.
Does it even have to happen?
Yeah. You know, that's it. I'm just hoping that this is one of those that, you know, big respect to The Rock. I've seen a lot of his movies. I enjoy them. But I'm also of the... We don't need a remake of that. The original's perfect.
It's just going to be a CGI green screen.
So... But he promises that he's a fan of the original, so it's all going to go well.
They also said that about RoboCop as well.
Yeah. And Ghostbusters.
Oh, man. You know, I still haven't seen that, and I refuse to.
I went to the cinema today. I got a little bit of hatred online from that, from a silly tweet joke that I did.
Okay. What was your joke?
Basically, when it was being released, I got a picture of the animated show.
Okay.
Yeah, and a picture of the girls, and just had one of them, you know, just put them together, you know, the real Ghostbusters, not the real Ghostbusters. And of course, I upset a few feminists online and, you know, yeah, got called a sexist. I wrote a blog about it where I tried to examine whether or not I was being sexist or not, you know, just typical, just something to write,
yeah,
put it out there. And I put in the blog that I promised that I would go to the cinema with an open mind and watch the movie, and if I was wrong, I would go back and write a retraction of any negative thing I might have said about it. You know, as far as I was concerned, my what's the word I'm looking for? My hesitation to have a Ghostbusters movie or remade was more to do with the fact that I didn't see why it needed to be remade anyway. I could have handled a sequel, but a remake basically says to me what came before is no longer relevant, just let's get rid of it. So I went to see the movie and I've never wrote that retraction.
No, it's incredible how the original still stands up as being as good as it is. It stands up against any movie made today, but even CGI wise, it's pretty solid.
It is a good film. I think my major problem with the new one, it's nothing to do with the women. They're all very talented. I do think there's a couple of times where the writing of the jokes, because they'd got so much hatred online and there's too much self-reference to that.
Yeah.
But the women themselves are all talented women who deserved a good movie. But the humor in it is absolutely terrible.
Flat. Absolutely.
It's over the top end. I just don't understand it. And as somebody who does consider myself a fairly funny person, you know, let's face it, I was stood on stage to tell people, I'm going to make you laugh. And then I'm just sitting there watching this film where they're making jokes. There's one character in it who hires them right at the beginning. And when they go to this haunted mansion that he's got, they see somebody else and they say, well, we was hired by whatever this guy's name is. And he's like, oh, but he's been dead for 20 years. And then this guy turns up and it's like, oh, you meant so-and-so junior. And it's like, if there was two of them, one of them's been dead for 20 years and one of them's still alive, you wouldn't assume they were talking about the dead one. That's not a good joke. That is terrible writing.
That is terrible writing. I don't
know. Whereas if you watch the original Ghostbusters, most of the acting by Aykroyd and everybody else is played very straight.
It's
the situation that's ridiculous and where the humor's brought from. The only one who's really not playing it straight, really, is Bill Murray.
Yeah, Bill Murray is playing Bill Murray.
Yeah, but the humor in the original is drawn from the situation, whereas if you ask me, in the remake, it's drawn from making really bad jokes, and it just doesn't fit.
No, because I guess you look at back at that original Ghostbusters movie from 1984, the three guys play it like they're down and out, really. They're playing it like they actually are investigators of the paranormal, but they're amateur. They don't know how this secret would even work, let alone the fact that it's going to work. And then
exactly. Ernie Hudson's there because he needs a job. He doesn't even believe in ghosts at this point.
No.
So, originally meant to be played by Eddie Murphy, apparently.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, and Bill Murray was meant to be John Belushi, but, you know, Aykroyd and Belushi back, you'd just be seeing the Blues Brothers again, so it's kind of a good thing that that didn't happen, but not the way it didn't happen.
So, I'm assuming you watch the animated series, like the real Ghostbusters.
Of course I watch the animated series, the real Ghostbusters, and the sequel, the Extreme Ghostbusters.
The canonological sequel as well.
Yes.
So the one thing I really liked about the Ghostbusters animated series, as the one I watched growing up and watched more often, it actually referenced the fact that the movie exists as a movie of the real Ghostbusters of the game, of the animated show. Because there's that particular episode in the first series where they actually go to the cinema to watch the Ghostbusters movie. And I'm like, what is this? It sounds like some kind of like a lawyer firm.
No, what I like is basically, obviously, the, like you say, it references the movie. The very first episode is basically a direct sequel to it.
Yes.
They obviously get their new costumes, and their old costumes become haunted. But their old costumes have been absolutely ruined by being covered in marshmallow. And that's why they get the new costumes, which are the different colours that you get in the cartoon. But yeah, as I say, I do like the fact that it is a continuation. And then, like you say, there's a movie made of it that they reference in universe that is basically our...
Yeah, the version we saw is the movie where they had like three actors come along, and that's why they look different. That's why Ray's bigger, and he's like, oh, they made him slim, that made you. What the happened to... Yeah.
Yeah. The other stupid little trivial fact that I like is the guy who played the voice of Peter Venkman in the cartoon.
That's right.
Used to play the voice of Garfield, and then Bill Murray, who played Peter Venkman in the Ghostbusters movie, went on to voice Garfield in the Garfield movie, and there's some weird crossovers going on.
Do you think Garfield would ever walk on the set of the Firehouse?
It could happen, as long as it's not on a Monday, which I've never understood why Garfield doesn't like Mondays. No. He's a cat. But
as if he has any concept of the day, as long as he gets food, water, sleep, he's just absolutely fine.
Have you ever seen the cartoon online, Garfield Without Garfield, or Garfield Minus Garfield?
No.
It's very, very dark. It's quite famous, but basically somebody has taken all the Garfield strips, removed Garfield from it, and just left everything else, and it becomes like a study into John's descent into madness and depression.
Really?
Because it's literally just about this guy talking to himself, and without Garfield's quips, it's quite depressing, and a lot of people rate it now higher than Garfield.
I might actually have to go check this out.
Yes, you should.
Garfield Without Garfield. Otherwise, I will forget, because brain like a sieve later. I think I'm getting to that point where my brain is just going, how old are you again, Christian? Garfield Without Garfield. Okay, I'm tagging that down. Now, so have you got, in terms of your comedy then, are you going to be looking to return to a stage sometime soon?
Hoping to. Like, the people that we, in the class with me, we've all decided to stay in touch, as you do after events like this. You know, this is something you've shared with people. There's very few people who you can go to who will understand this unless they've done themselves. So we've decided, most of us, that we want to continue with this. So a couple of them have set up their own comedy night that's going to be running monthly at the Jam Cafe. I think the first one's on the August the 19th. Unfortunately, I won't be performing in that one. My name didn't come out of the hat. But a couple of the others who performed at the Glee Club will be. That is for charity, and I can't remember which one it is at the moment, but it was picked by Charlie, who was one of the performers.
Okay.
But yeah, that's running at the, as I say, the Jam Cafe, called One Night Stand Up. As far as I'm aware, it's free to enter until we get really famous, in which case we'll jack up the prices.
That's awesome. Because I think there's another growing comedy based in Nottingham called, I think it's called QCF, I think they're called.
Right.
They kind of, much the same way. I think they did a night, and then they developed into making their own, and they run the Canal House, I think it is, every month.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few now, because this Ultra Comedy, like that, the one I did wasn't the first one, and there was three others before it. So, according to Chris, our teacher, that basically about 80% of the students who go through it then decide that they want to at least continue in some way.
Okay.
I am trying to get myself a few more spots, some gigs, nothing will be as big as the Glee for a few years, but start at the beginning, start at the bottom, work my way up. I enjoyed it. I really did. A couple of the other guys have already managed to perform again since then, and they've done very well. They're very talented people if you ever get a chance to see them.
Okay.
In fact, Charlie, who I was just talking about, who chose the charity for this one, she will actually be performing the night that we record this.
Okay.
So
No, that's actually that's really good, man. So it's good that you you dip your toes in the water and you go, I like this. Let's explore more. And then of course there's the journey what comes with it. You know, it's really interesting about the comedy scene now. It's really supportive of each other. As before, it's all like kind of cutthroat trying to make sure you've got booking. Now it's like, hey, come on, let me just teach you this. This part didn't work, and this part will work. And you know, maybe you should take my bit here because that seems to fit with your bit. And you know, I mean, how it goes.
That is the lovely thing about being part of the group. I am a naturally reclusive person. I hate groups. I've always said it. But being a part of this comedy group, there has been several times that I've sat down and gone, I wrote this joke. It doesn't work for me, but I think it'll work for you. Or someone said to me, that would work better if you did this. Did you actually manage to see the pirate video of my set?
No.
Well, there is on my page, basically recorded by one of my friends. There will be a proper video that was recorded at Glee, released at some point. But one of my friends recorded my entire set, which is nice of them because I didn't get to see it. And there's one of the bits that I do in there. I'm not going to spoil it for you, you know, but it gets an absolute, for me, a huge reaction. And that comes from performing it in class and basically Chris turning around to us and just going, it's good, but you need to commit. You need to commit to that bit. If you do that, you're going to get a massive reaction to it. And yes, you know, 10 years working in comedy, he knows his stuff.
So you and him are going to keep in contact?
Well, he's friends on Facebook. He liked a picture of me earlier from when I was 21.
Oh, is this with you with the hat, yeah?
The hat and the net shirt, yeah. And the painted nails, which I've got done today as well.
What?
You know.
No, it's good, man. So the thing is, comedy opens up many other avenues, doesn't it? I think it's, in and of itself, comedy, particularly stand-up, is a unique art form. You know, to go in front of a group of people and just talk shit, it's pretty crazy.
It's not quite just talking shit, though. When it's done well, that's what it looks like. And that was one of the things that I found that I had to learn was, obviously, I'd write something down and I'd think, right, I've written that the way I would say it. And then I'd pick it up and I'd try and perform it as written and go,
yeah,
I don't talk like that. You know, I don't know.
But that's the skill of the pattern, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was, for me, most of it. It was like I'd have the idea, I'd write it down, and then it was learning the joke and learning to say it the way I would say it rather than the way I would write it. Because the way we write and the way we talk are slightly different.
You're absolutely right. They really are. They are a distance world apart.
Mm-hmm.
When you are a performer, you know, you've also got to learn when not to ad-lib when you are playing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill in and of itself, too.
But no, as I say, I think one of the things that I found really interesting throughout this whole process was just watching everybody find their voice. You know, obviously, that first week, we was all stood in a big circle in Via Fossa trying to tell a funny story about ourselves, which luckily for me, I was one of the last people to go on that day, because when he first said this, my mind instantly went blank and I didn't have any funny stories. I could probably not have even told you my name at that point, but my mind went completely blank. But by the time he did get round to me, I thought, right, well, I'll just tell the story of when my daughter was born, which, you know, shouldn't be funny, but I'm sure I can make it funny. And there was one line that I used in that little story that made it through to my final set, and I added it back in 5 minutes before I went on stage. I thought, I like that line, I'm just going to add it back in. And it got a laugh, it got a clap, and I'm so glad that I did it. Even my fellow performers, some of them whom hadn't been there on that first week, were like, where did that line come from? That was really funny.
You got some more material to build upon right now, have you?
I'm trying to write some stuff and come up with stuff. Obviously, like I said to you earlier, I'd had ideas since like January, so it's now trying to build on those so that I've got a handful of things so that I don't just keep going to different places and performing the exact same set every time, you know, so that I've got a bit of a mix. You know, I will be performing the same set that I've done at the Glee again because I enjoy it, but obviously that's a 5-minute set. If I booked for 10 minutes, I'm going to need a little bit more, whatever. So,
but there's something really valuable out of that. You obviously have professional coaching, and then there's like, well, where's my own ideas? I can develop this.
Mm-hmm.
The heck, I turn a 5-minute set into 15, maybe.
Everybody who performed at the Glee, everything that they performed was written by them. It was not handed to us by like Chris or anybody else. It was our own ideas that, yeah, we'd performed in front of the group and had feedback from, but ultimately it was us, and that was the good thing about it. The second week of the lesson was the only time we ever had to tell anybody else's joke, and that was literally just an exercise in learning a routine. So it was just to get our memories working, because obviously to memorize a routine, memorize somebody else's first before trying to write your own, just break it down that little bit. But it is one of those life-changing kind of experiences. I didn't expect to feel the way I did when it happened. I expected to be going into it, and I'll be honest, the day of the performance, I was the calmest I have ever been in my life, and even that scares me.
Is that because of perhaps all the anxiety, the worry, the concern? It isn't there. I've got a plan. I know what I'm going to do. I know how to...
I think literally what happened to me was like, because backstage, everybody was handling it differently. There was a couple who you could see were just going over their lines. And there was others who were convinced they'd forgotten everything they'd learned. You know, others writing notes on their hands. And for some reason, my brain at that point had just said to me, it's here now. You've done everything you can. Just, this is it. There is nothing else you can do. Just sit back. And I didn't start feeling nerves until I was watching Nick Pope, who was on before me. And she was doing her routine and absolutely killing it. And at that point, my head went, oh, God, I'm next. I've got to follow this.
I've got to follow this.
Yeah, like, she's doing brilliant. I've got to follow this. Everybody's done brilliant. But I'll be honest, as Chris was introducing me, I basically skipped up onto the stage. And as soon as I picked up that mic and started talking, it felt natural to me. You know, the nerves kind of faded. And I was just in the zone, and I came off and I thought, I need to do that again.
Nice, sounds good. The best part about it, from what you're saying, there's a bit of a plan now. You kind of know what you're going forward next. You know, that those worries, those, you know, anxious nerves have actually gone completely away and gone, actually, I know exactly what I've got to do next.
Yep. I mean, obviously those nerves are going to come back just before every performance, as they always do. If any performer ever tells you, oh, I wasn't nervous at all, they're lying to you.
They are.
But it is that knowing that I can actually do it. And out of all of it, that's the only feeling that I wanted, was to one day be able to show this to my own daughter and just say to her, you can do it. If you get up and try, you can do it.
Dude, you know what? That actually sounds like the best place actually to bring this to a close, really. You know, you can do it. You really can.
Okay.
Right, dude, well, before we head off, man, do you want to leave, obviously, some details about yourself?
Right.
Tell me about your social media stuff. Tell me where you've got some minds. People can find your stuff, like, on YouTube, if you've got any kind of showreel stuff going on.
Right.
Like podcasts and so on.
At the moment, if you want to follow me for, like, comedy stuff, basically all of my social media at the moment is at @just_jcomedy. That's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to listen to the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at @timewarp_cinema, and we host on Podbean, and it goes to Spotify, it goes to iTunes, and it also goes to YouTube, and you'd be looking for the We Free Geeks on that, because that's our old podcast. But
I know how Luke knows you,
Luke
Fryer.
Ah, yes,
Rero Rev.
Yes.
He actually told me about this podcast about a year ago.
Yeah.
Now I know how you guys.
Yes. No, I know Luke very well. It took us a while to get him to listen to us as a rep coming round, and it's like, no, we do this podcast. We think you'd enjoy it. You know, come on. And obviously anybody saying, I do this podcast. And it's like, yeah, okay, of course you do. I'll give it a listen. And he did. And then he was like, he was so happy when I told him that I'm bringing back a podcast, like not the same one, but I'm bringing back a podcast. He seemed so happy about that. So,
yeah, because afterwards I was talking about my stuff, and he goes, "Oh, there's just three guys that work over there," and then, well, yeah. and that's how.
Yeah. So we were the Wee Free Geeks, but there was four of us because joined after we had the name, and we was just like, "No, we've got the name now, so
we're not going to drop this." Three.
Yeah,
you're plus one.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we should round up them, and it's been awesome to talk to you, man. We've got to catch up stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, we shall keep in contact, and obviously I'll make sure that this gets edited. You obviously get a chance to see it, of course, before it goes live. Obviously, Accurist World can be found in much the same place as yours is.
Yep.
So make sure you hit a subscribe and a like and all that usual fluffy stuff.
Oh, don't worry. I'll drop all of the obviously on my own podcast. I'll be dropping all of this. Well, I did this and this. So go find this guy and follow me and like me. So, and you'll have to come over and review a movie with us at some point.
Yeah, I'd love to. I really would.
Okay.
All right, dude. Catch you later, man. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye.
We'd like to reach out and say thank you for Jay Coles to not only being the guest for this episode, but also being a great support in the form of the editing of this particular show. Life, it seems, can take unexpected turns, and support can come from unexpected places. We'd like to also thank you for taking the time to listen. Check out the YouTube video of this episode for exclusive Overdrive content, available at youtube.com/ChristianLander and ChristianLander.com. This has been Our Curious World.